This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
In his elegiac, I remember, Thomas Hood writes of his childhood home with warmth and longing, aware that the reality of his adult life is very different from that of his youth. It was a theme parodied by Philip Larkin in his own poem of the same name. This time, the poet barely recognises his hometown of Coventry as his train stops at a once familiar platform. It was, he reflects, the place where his childhood was unspent. He does at least forgive the city, concluding that it's not the place's fault. Nothing, like something, happens anywhere. This is, of course, the difficulty in writing about the city of your youth. Too ebullient, and it veers toward rose-tinted reminiscence. Too dismissive, and it ignores what I believe to be a central truth of writing. Everything you write is born from the same place as you. When I published my first novel, Borderlands, in 2007, I was asked at an event how long it had taken to write the book. About 6 months, I said. A friend and fellow writer, Dave Duggan, approached me afterwards and said, "It didn't take 6 months to write. It took a lifetime." He was, of course, quite right. Although I do not wholly agree with the creative writing course mantra that you should only write what you know, how would any crime writer or science fiction or fantasy writer manage that? There is a degree of veracity in it. What you know, what you experience, feeds into everything you write. Writers are magpies, collecting together all the shiny bits and scraps of our own lives and everybody else's, and reusing them as we see fit. The drawback to it, though, is that the familiar can seem common, uninteresting, a place where nothing, like something, happens, as Larkin says. A fellow crime author told me that she sets her novels in America because it's sexier than Ireland. There is a reluctance, perhaps, to accept that the crimes in an Irish novel can be as exotic or significant as, say, Scandinavia or the US. But in this, I'm reminded of Patrick Kavanagh's poem Epic. Concerned that the local is not of sufficient significance to inspire a poem, the speaker begins to doubt his subject. "Till Homer's ghost came whispering to my mind, he said, 'I made the Iliad from such a local Roy. Gods make their own importance.'" The readers, the gods, will make their own importance. Likewise, then, just because Derry is well known to me does not preclude the fact that someone else might find it interesting enough to wish to read about it. With that in mind, I felt justified in examining the city in which I grew up through my own writing. Therefore, when I started the first draft of my first book, I based it in Derry. Ironically, I found it impossible to do. I found that I knew the place too well, too intimately, and became paralysed by detail. The story would not be told. In the end, I moved the book to Lifford, 20 miles away, and it was only when I had moved from the city myself that I finally found myself free enough to write, albeit initially about the border region rather than my hometown. Borderlands was about borders and jurisdictions, sides and tribes, and the space between one and the other. The border, lying barely 15 minutes from the centre of Derry, was a significant feature of my own childhood. I recall passing through military hangars each Sunday on a family outing to Buncrana to buy ice cream and chef's brown sauce, the latter not available in the north at that time. But what really interested me was the space between the two. The land that lay seemingly in neither north nor south, between two checkpoints, a no man's land, unpoliced. On the news growing up, we'd hear of people making for the border, fleeing across it along unapproved roads, the feature a porous membrane through which it seemed those evading justice could escape. It is, in retrospect, no surprise that I should have written about the borderlands, the space between two sides, reflecting the moral and judicial hinterland which Inspector Devlin inhabits for me. By the fifth Devlin novel, The Nameless Dead, those issues had refined themselves to a setting on an island, through which the border runs and on which are buried not only the remains of one of the disappeared, but also those of unbaptized children, refused burial on sanctified ground. The island, neither here nor there, limbo, cast adrift from either side by its bridges, long allowed to decay and fall, split in half by the border, sits at the centre of the River Foyle. And that brought me back to Derry. The Foyle is central to many of my books because, despite the fact that the defining geographical characteristic of Derry is often said to be its historic walls, when I think of the city, I inevitably think of water. For me, the city has always been most defined by the river that bisects it. I grew up a Catholic in the Waterside, the area of the city that sat on the east bank of the river. It was an area predominantly Protestant, in contrast with the predominantly Catholic city site on the west bank where I went to school as a teenager. The name the city was called, Derry or Londonderry, depended on which side of the river, on which side of the political and religious divide you were. Indeed, each of these designations, east bank, west bank, waterside, city side, were defined by their position relative to the river, the space between the two. Before the building of the Foyle Bridge in the late 70s, the double-decker Craigavon Bridge was the only structure to link these two sides together. Consequently, a strategically placed bomb or suspect device on either level of the bridge, and the two sides of the city were disconnected. As a child growing up in the Waterside, this duality in the city was impossible to ignore. It seemed a microcosmic reflection of the whole Northern Irish identity, where you lived, what names you used, what side you were on. The reality, of course, was a little more complex, not so clearly defined as just one or the other, but somewhere in between. I think that this quality of the city, above all else, influenced my own writing. It provided a fascinating geopsychology for the city itself, a sense of them and us for the majority of those living in the area, and a feeling of besiegement for the minority of the other persuasion who found themselves living among them in small pockets. Ironically, the river which split the city in half was also central to the first example of whole island cooperation in the country. The Foyle Fisheries Commission, established in 1952, was the first whole island body in Ireland, required to police the river along whose bed the country's border ran until just short of Derry City it veered off at a tangent, before correcting its course below Culmore. Indeed, so obvious is the swerve the border makes around the city, in the 1980s, the government had considered straightening its course and formally cutting both the bridges and Derry itself in half, with the Waterside remaining in Northern Ireland and the city side becoming part of the Republic. I suppose, then, it was inevitable that at some stage I would feel compelled to examine my home city head on. I did it first in the novel Little Girl Lost, the story of a child found in an ancient woodland of Prehen, in a blizzard, unable to speak, wearing her pyjamas and marked with blood which was not her own. The central character, D.S. Lucy Black, a young Catholic woman in the newly formed PSNI, must piece together the girl's story. The catalysts that prompted the writing of this book, and my setting it in Derry, were numerous. The North had settled into a workable peace, albeit one which had salved the wounds rather than healing them. Derry, though, had changed for me for the better, and Lucy Black was reflective of those changes. When I grew up, buildings along the quay on both sides turned their back on the water and faced inwards. Increasingly, though, Derry seemed to me to be a city which was starting to embrace the river, with new buildings facing outward, towards the water, acknowledging rather than ignoring its presence. As a consequence, the two sides have ended up facing one another across the Foyle, creating an awareness of the various parts of the city to all of its inhabitants. When I started writing, I used two detectives, one from the Guards in the south and his counterpart in the PSNI in the north, to reflect and chart the changing dynamic. Initially forced into an uneasy alliance simply by virtue of their having ended up on two sides of the one border on which the body of a young girl is found. As both the books and the city have developed, the two have become friends. For that's the thing about rivers, they can be bridged. Equally, the two sides of this city seem to have grown more comfortable with their differing cultures. This year's 12th July and 12th August parades in the city passed without incident, as did the Irish Music Fla several days after the latter. While elsewhere in the north, bonfires of belligerence burned, Derry danced to its own unique tune. There is, I think, a confidence needed for a city to accept and reconcile its own disparate parts and thrive. A city of two halves, gathering itself together, unifying across its river, respecting and celebrating the culture of the other. That complexity of character makes for a fertile imaginative setting for a novel. Particularly, it seemed to me, a crime novel. Crime fiction is concerned with vicariously facing our fears, safe in the knowledge that justice will be done and that order will be restored. But life is not like that. Growing up in Derry brought home to me in so many ways that crime and punishment, criminal and detective, are not always two clearly fixed opposing points. Derry was a city that witnessed atrocities perpetrated on all and by all sides, military and paramilitary. The Droppingwell pub bombing, the Rising Sun trick-or-treat shootings, Bloody Sunday. Through these and numerous other atrocities, innocent people from every background suffered with little real hope of justice. Growing up here showed that the punishment doesn't always match the crime, that lawmakers can be lawbreakers, and that order is not always restored. The troubles and many of the issues raised during that period have not been resolved, and yet we here have had to accept that and try to move forward regardless. I find that a powerful concept to explore in a genre which so often thrives on resolution and concerns itself primarily with issues of justice. As a consequence, in my own novels, I'm fascinated with the impact of the past on the present and the fluidity of these concepts of crime and punishment in Northern Ireland. Dostoevsky claimed that we can judge society by how it treats its prisoners. By extension, then, we can also judge a society and the individuals in it by how it defines justice. The crime novel form is a perfect vehicle for that exploration. More, though, to my mind, the best crime writers use place in such a way in their work that it becomes a character itself, almost of as much importance as the main detective. Indeed, to the extent that one becomes intricately bound to and inseparable from the other. Morse and Oxford, Rebus and Edinburgh, Marlowe and L.A. The place is simultaneously reflected in and a reflection of the detective who operates there. Crime fiction ultimately recognises the fact that every city has those mean streets down which, as Raymond Chandler claimed, a good man or woman must go. I believe the more that the city carries with it a sense of duality, a sense of ambiguity, the more the choice of that city as a setting for a crime novel makes sense. So what is the city of Derry or Londonderry or Dura to me? A city of two sides. A city positioned in a low river valley, yet which spreads upwards along riverbanks with streets so steep you couldn't cycle up them. A city built in monastic settlements, surrounded by ancient woodland, yet along whose river red brick buildings proliferate. A city of walls built to withstand besiegement, but which was founded by a saint who extolled the virtues of looking outwards and a ministry of mission. A city which witnessed some of the worst moments of the Troubles, experienced some of the greatest levels of social deprivation and social injustice, yet which also shines as a beacon of hope in these darkening days of parade protests. A city which is crying out for expansion of its university, and yet which simultaneously has produced some of the greatest writers and playwrights, poets and politicians this country has seen. It is a dichotomic city, one of opposites and ambiguities, a city of pain and a city of hope. What city, then, is better suited to crime fiction than one with so many contradictions, so many aspects, so many names? A city such as mine.